Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology, specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Francine welcomes Tisha Johnson. Ms. Johnson is Chief Operating Officer for the Yale Center for Clinical Investigation and the Associate Director for Clinical Research for the Yale School of Medicine. Here's Francine Foss.
Can we start off by having you give us a little history about yourself? Tell us how you got to the Yale Cancer Center and what got you interested in this field of clinical trials.
Well, I started my career here at Yale actually more on the administrative side, working with the bench scientist. And then I was recruited off to University of Wisconsin-Madison and spent about 5 years there leading their clinical research efforts, and then moved to Vermont. And prior to that, I was in biotech. So I've been sort of around research for a very long time. And I think the draw to clinical trials and the clinical side of things just came out of a basic need for the research faculty. The research faculty really just need a lot of support to get the work done, and that's what we're here to do. That's what my job is all about at the School of Medicine.
So, Tisha, just to give people an idea of the magnitude of the research effort at the medical school and in the cancer center, can you give us some rough idea of how many clinical trials and how many investigative projects are ongoing that are under your auspices?
So at the medical school, when we look at just the number of clinical trials, that means a trial involving a human being, we have generally about 900 studies, and that's in all phases, some that are very early and very basic, and all the way thinking about outcomes-based research and surveys and disease prevention. In the Cancer Center, we have around just under 200 active studies. That's studies that involve therapeutic agents and therapeutic interventions, as well as outcome and prevention studies. And we probably have another 50 or so studies queued up, ready to begin enrollment of actual people into the therapeutic pipeline.
When we talk about clinical trials, we typically think about a patient getting, say, a medication. Mm-hmm. But clinical trials span, as you pointed out, a whole bunch of different types of interventions. And you mentioned outcomes research is one of them. So in terms of overall kind of the whole field of clinical trials, can you just break it down a little bit for people and again, kind of tell us what the different types of trials are?
Sure. Basically, a clinical trial, as we define it here in the School of Medicine and most of academic medicine, is just a study that involves people. But I use the word people loosely. Some of our studies are very, very basic, and they could be just using human material. So someone might give a blood sample, and then our researchers take it back to the lab, and they're focused more on the genetic aspects of research. And moving from that very, very basic and early research, even some of it involving animal models of human disease, then we move on to earlier phase clinical research, where we are really looking at the development of new therapies and phase one-based research. That means it's first time in humans. And then our research really stretches the entire gamut from that very early phase. It's first time we're looking at something in man, very complicated studies, to sometimes we're participating in very large multi-center studies where we might be one of only 40 centers around the country looking at an intervention. And then we have research that's very much sort of, when I say outcomes-based, we have research in the School of Public Health that looks at disease prevention on large scales involving thousands of people. We have survey-based research. I think when we say clinical trials, people automatically think, well, they want me to take a pill or they want to inject me with something. Some of our research, as an example, in the Department of Psychiatry really involves involves things like surveys to understand depression or to understand disease the diseases of mental health. We have a lot of imaging-based research here, really looking at images of the brain and understanding people's sensitivity to food and food images. So it really, really stretches the entire gamut here at Yale.
So, and you work, as you mentioned, with all different disciplines, not just with cancer, but you oversee all of the research that's being done in all aspects of the medical school.
Yes, I do. My job really is to facilitate research. Research is so complicated. Years ago, I think the way that research was really done in an academic center was you had a single investigator, and he had grants, and he had an infrastructure. And the regulatory burdens for the investigator, although the regulations are there for a reason, obviously, they were very different. Now, that single investigator, it's so hard for them to do all of this and still focus on the most important aspects, their research, their patient care, training the next generation of clinical scientists. So our center and my job is really to focus on all of those other aspects so that our faculty like you, can just focus on those really important things, advancing the research, the patient care, and training the next generation.
So there are multiple aspects to doing a clinical trial, as you alluded to. Can you step us through what those different aspects are, what the different steps are?
Sure. Basically, it all starts with an idea. Most of the research that we do here is investigator-initiated research. That means our faculty have an idea, and they would like to pursue it and see where it goes. And so that involves the faculty member first having to develop a protocol, which is basically a recipe. This is what I'm going to do. This is what the study is going to look like. And then from there, they'll have to prepare a submission to the IRB. That's the Institutional Review Board. And that's basically a body of people, both internal and external, including lay members, who are charged with looking at everything that we do that would involve a person to say, this is really an okay thing to do to a person. And they review all aspects of the study. And the investigator would then have to reply to any concerns they might have, address those. They get through the IRB, and then from a regulatory review point, they might be ready to start. But there's also, if we're going to receive funding, whether it be from the NIH and its federal funding, or whether we have an industry partner, there's usually a grant or a contract that has to be negotiated. And so there are steps involved there, preparing budgets, understanding the total cost to get the study done, and then there's facilitating the work. And so to facilitate the work here, we have many, many research cores. We have imaging cores, we have biostatistics cores, we have informatics cores, and we really oversee a lot of the activity there to make sure that those cores and they have the resources they need to support the faculty. After they have the approvals for from the IRB, and you have a signed contract or you have a grant that's been approved, then you're actually ready to begin the really difficult part, finding patients that you need to match the criteria for your trial that you've outlined. So it's really quite extensive. Sometimes the startup time alone can be several months to a year.
Are there teams of people that work together to get all these pieces in place?
Yes, absolutely. We have, as I mentioned, statisticians. We have the informatics professionals who help us to gather the data. We have research coordinators, trained staff members, nurses, non-nurses, technicians. They're all involved in really pulling this together on behalf of the investigator. The investigators themselves actually are very active here. In some institutions, they're more hands-off, and there are a lot of support staff to do the work here. But I find the faculty at Yale are so invested in what they're doing that they really oversee a lot of the work personally and even do a lot of the work personally.
Tisha, is it your impression from working with multiple faculty members, particularly those who are doing translational research, that it's easy for a physician who's interested in getting, say, a molecular test or doing some translational part to a clinical trial to be able to interface with the basic science groups and some of the other core facilities on campus?
It's easier than it used to be. I think that the way that medicine has changed, the way that research has changed, is there's much more of a connection between basic science faculty and clinical faculty. The Cancer Center is a wonderful example of that, and the Cancer Biology Institute is really designed to bring our faculty closer together so they can have those conversations, so that we can really translate those very early basic findings into something that actually might have benefit for a patient one day.
Patients may or may not be concerned about the whole issue of their DNA getting out there, or confidential information about, you know, their genes or proteins that they have or whatever in their tissues that might somehow get out and affect their insurance or other issues with confidentiality. As we're doing more molecular studies, that's more of an issue. Can you talk a little bit about some of the safeguards in research that protect patients from that happening?
Oh, absolutely. As I mentioned, all research is reviewed by the Institutional Review Board, and privacy standards in research are very stringent. The regulations have changed even as recently as last year, dealing with the advent of electronic medical records and things like that. And so new high-tech security standards have even been layered on to our not only our research records, but our clinical records. And there's a very careful review by the IRB to look at the security profile of every study that comes through before it can even begin. And so those are really important things to have. If someone decides to participate in a clinical trial, they're actually spelled out how they're going to be protected and the security around all of their confidential health and genetic information. It's spelled out in what's called an informed consent and the HIPAA privacy statement that we have of the university. And so they'll actually see in great detail how their information is going to be protected, who has access to it, how it'll be used not only for this study but in the future.
Another question, Tisha, is what is the interaction between, say, the investigator and the FDA? The FDA, of course, regulates most of these new drugs, and I'm just wondering, how often do you interface with the FDA, and how does that come into play as clinical trials are evolving and being developed?
For the most part, our research is regulated by standards, but as dictated by the FDA. There are many, many standards, some NIH and other regulatory authorities, but for the FDA, they really get involved when we want to do what's called an investigator-initiated application. So we have an investigator who has a compound that they're interested in, and most of the time, we don't have an industry sponsor. We might have an industry sponsor who's just providing some resources, but the investigator themselves is actually the applying party to the FDA. And we do, I would say, maybe 20 to 30 of those kinds of studies here, where it's our faculty and our institution interacting with the FDA, submitting the applications, describing our studies, saying, this is what we want to do as a research protocol, as a research study. Is this okay? And that's really where we have the involvement of the FDA, a lot more actually in cancer than the other areas of the institution. But we don't do an awful lot of that kind of research right now. As I mentioned, a lot of investigator-initiated work, but generally under the auspices of NIH and other regulatory bodies and other funders.
And it's also true with the FDA that since they oversee research in general, that they may actually come in and visit Yale and look at our records just to make sure that we're doing things properly?
Yes, so not only the FDA, but when we have sponsors involved, pharmaceutical sponsors, they come in. And so there are people coming in all the time to look at what we're doing. And our research units in the hospital and research that takes place there, JCO standards apply, and those visits happen annually. For our research that's funded by the NIH, they actually come in and do site visits quite often, as we will have in our cancer center in a few years when we go in for renewal. So there are lots and lots of not only auditors but granting officials that come in and take a look and basically give us the blessing of what we're doing here, how our research is run.
Great. I'd like to take a break right now for a short medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more about clinical trials with Tisha Johnson.
Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there's new hope. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. Women should schedule a baseline mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center, to make innovative new treatments available to patients. A potential breakthrough in treating chemotherapy-resistant breast cancer is now being studied at Yale, combining BSI-101, a PARP inhibitor, with the chemotherapy drug irinotecan. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Francine Foss, and I'm joined today by my guest, Tisha Johnson, who is working in a very major way in the whole clinical trials and clinical research arena here at the Yale University. And Tisha, we talked a lot at the beginning of the show about clinical trials and various components of clinical trials and how one gets a trial up and running. But I know that one of your important roles involves what we call the YCCI. I wonder if you could tell us what the YCCI is, what its function is, and a little bit about its history at Yale.
The YCCI is the Yale Center for Clinical Investigation, and it's the academic home of our Clinical and Translational Sciences Award, the CTSA, which is a major research award from the NIH. We actually started our center prior to even knowing that we were going to be a CTSA. Our dean, Bob Alpern, who is wonderful and insightful, decided that he really wanted to grow clinical and translational research at Yale. And so he pulled together some really senior faculty members and asked them, what do we need to do to grow it here at Yale? And that was around 2004 that he initiated the strategic planning process. And what the faculty came back with was, it's really not about the next recruitment or the next resource that you open. What we need is an infrastructure to do clinical and translational research. And right in the strategic plan, they named the center and said, this is what we want. We want a center whose only job is to facilitate research, to help us get through the review process, to help us get contracts, to help train our staff. And that's what the YCCI is about. It's that infrastructure. And also, we have a whole focus on training not only staff who are involved in research, but training future faculty members to be research scientists. And so we have training awards and pilot projects and those sorts of things. And that's really what the center's about.
Is this center federally funded as well?
It is. And so in addition to We have a lot of institutional support from the dean's office and from the hospital, but we also have the very large grant, the CTSA, which is around just over $9 million a year, and we were just renewed, and so we're in the first of our 5 years of funding. In addition to that, our individual faculty who are utilizing the centers, their grant dollars totaled almost $200 million. And so it's a lot of federal money that is involved in the research of the center.
And this center is focused exclusively on clinical research?
Clinical and translational research. So anything sort of leading to the translation of research in human disease.
Can you talk a little bit about the relationship between the YCCI and the Yale Cancer Center and the Smilow Cancer Hospital?
Sure. I think from the very beginning, when we wrote our CTS application, when we thought about the development of the Yale Center for Clinical Investigation, one of the biggest goals we had was not to duplicate any resource that existed at Yale. Instead, what we focused on were strategic partnerships, where we could have relationships with other major centers on campus and say, what can we do together that would be greater than the sum of our two parts? And so that's really the relationship with the Cancer Center. We've done things like we created a brand new biostatistics core in partnership with the School of Public Health and recruited its leader, Dr. Peter Peduzzi. We've initiated some major advances in the IT infrastructure here at Yale together. We purchased equipment. We've funded joint pilots. And we've had some major collaborations around clinical trials and the clinical trial support structure to run research here and to help facilitate research for the faculty.
Can you tell us a little bit about a new initiative that you've undertaken, which I think is going to be a very important one, and that is the whole issue of outreach and clinical trial awareness campaign.
Yeah, this is really, this month we've launched a major campaign to help the public understand the importance of clinical trials and to make them more aware of the fact that clinical trials exist. This has really been 2 years in the making, 2 years of research, of listening. We've had focus groups, we've had community leaders involved. And what we really come to understand is that the general public don't understand clinical trials. They have the misperception that there really aren't adequate protections in research, or that everything that we want to do involves people with diseases, or that it involves pills. And so we really want to correct a lot of the misperceptions and give people good information about clinical trials and clinical research and why it's so important. And that's what we're doing now.
Can you talk about your approach? How are you actually going to get this information across to people?
Well, one of the things that we realized when we did some of the focus groups was our general audience said, when I'm at Yale, I don't always have good information about what you're doing. And so one approach is literally to get the audience that we already see. So to provide in our clinics a more integrated approach about what we're doing with research. And so brochures, informational material, we've had a major piece of this that really is web-based. We're so different. We're a Google society. Anytime you want to know something, it's the first thing you do is go on Google. And so we've had a major refresh in our website to provide a lot more resources and a lot more information about what clinical trials are available, information about clinical trials, frequently asked questions, those sorts of things. In addition to that, we've actually had also included some advertising in this campaign. And so people will see, if they haven't already, train billboards and things like that talking about clinical trials and where they can get more information.
What about patients who aren't actually at Yale right now, patients in the community and other parts of the state, for instance, who might be interested or want to know about clinical trials?
The first thing that I would say is visit our website. So if it's yalestudies.org, or if it's for cancer, it's yalecancercenter.org. And there's a lot of information on our website for not only for patients, but for physicians who want to refer patients for our clinical trials. And I think the other point that we want to make with this is that we have research that's available for those who have been diagnosed with a disease like cancer, but also we have a lot of research that's generally for healthy people. So we're looking for volunteers to help us with some of our genetic studies, with some of our survey-based studies, with disease prevention. We have a lot of work in diabetes, cardiovascular disease, mental health. It's really the gamut. And so if you're thinking about how you can help develop the next generation of medicines, it's visit the website and understand that. And we also have a new profile feature. So if you don't see a study that's quite right, quite what you're looking for, you can actually build a research profile and tell us what you might be interested in the future. And then when one of those studies opens here at Yale, we'll contact you.
Is there a phone number for patients who just have basic questions about research?
Sure. Our telephone number, there's actually an 800 number that's on the website, but our general telephone number is 203-785-3482. And anyone can call that number, and all telephone calls are returned for anyone who wants more information about clinical trials.
One of the other questions that people may have is with respect to financial obstacles that patients may have. Say, how am I going to travel from one end of the state to Yale if I want to participate in that trial, and how long am I going to have to be there? I know some of the trials have built in ways of dealing with that.
Absolutely. Most research studies offer reimbursement for travel. And so they'll give you gas money, money to park. Some studies also offer small financial incentives for participation. And so those aren't concerns. If you have those concerns, you could speak to the research team and say, you know, these are my concerns, and they'll be happy to answer questions about specific studies. But almost all of our studies have some sort of financial reimbursement related to travel expenses.
If a patient were to see a study or have an interest in a particular study, there are eligibility criteria that need to be fulfilled. So could you just kind of talk through what would happen next. So a patient maybe sees a study online that they might be interested in, and they make a phone call. What's going to happen next?
So if you see a study, as an example, you've been diagnosed with cancer and you see a study and it looks right for you on the website, that's not really the whole story. There's a lot of criteria related to whether you're the right specific eligibility for the study. And so it might involve age, it might involve the stage of your disease. And so really what happens next, if it's in the cancer center, is the phone call will be returned by a research nurse who can really speak to you and understand what are the specifics of you and your disease and that study. And so it might be that you might not qualify for the study you saw and you thought would be right for you, but they'll help you and point you right in the right direction. If it's a study that you're not, it's one of these healthy volunteer studies, then they might be looking for specific parameters, and so the recruitment coordinators can help you with that and to help determine whether you're right for a specific study that you see online.
If you have a study, say you're an investigator at Yale and you have a study that's not accruing patients, would your office get involved in with your outreach programs? How would you go about trying to look for patients for those studies?
Sure. One of the biggest efforts that we have that's new in this campaign are our partnerships with the community. We have a lot of studies that are really focused on health disparities and looking at specific diseases, and reaching the minority population has been extremely difficult, and not just for Yale. This is a national problem that, in general, minorities don't participate in clinical trials at the same rate as other races or as Caucasians. And so in order to really correct this, we've partnered with community. We've partnered with the African American Episcopal Zion churches. It's 18 local churches, African American churches, and their ministers and their presiding elder, as well as Junta, a Hispanic organization that's local. And they're really helping us to spread the message in the community that it's important for everyone to participate in clinical trials, because it's important for us to understand various genetic makeups and how diseases affect different populations. Some of our studies are geared towards specific populations where the disease is more prevalent, like diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, some kinds of cancer. So that's been an important piece of this effort. And that's been really important for our investigators because they haven't had the kind of access to do these kinds of studies. Additionally, we're hoping that this new outreach campaign, this new awareness campaign, will make it easier for not only for people to sort of self-identify that I might be interested in participating in research, but for physicians to have at their ready a list of studies that they could search and say, you know, I've got this patient that I might want to refer to Yale. And so those are the major pieces, I think, that will help faculty who have studies that aren't accruing.
I think the whole disparities issue is a really important one. And looking at it, you know, from the other side, if you're in a minority group, it's important to know that a lot of the research that we've done, particularly with drugs and in cancer and specific diseases other than cancer, primarily looks at, you know, Caucasian populations. And we really need to have more studies with large numbers of patients coming from different ethnic groups to understand whether there are differences in how these drugs work and, you know, responses to some of these treatments.
That's a major piece of the campaign and the effort in the community. We had probably about 20 hours of training for the community members who are involved in this with us, and including some sessions with your director, Dr. Lynch, really explaining a lot of these concepts in cancer. And when we explained to them that the FDA has actually had to change labels, adding specific racial indications on some of their drugs, they were blown away. They didn't understand that. I think the old sort of guinea pig mentality is really what stuck with them. And so we've explained to them all of the protections that are in place and how research is really done and these health disparities issues and what we're trying to address. And they are really, they've really not only come on board full force, but they have become our advocates. They are called cultural ambassadors. And so you might not only see campaign material with our faculty, but you'll see campaign material with our cultural ambassadors from the community talking about the importance of clinical trials in the community and around the community.
Tisha Johnson is Chief Operating Officer for the Yale Center for Clinical Investigation and the Associate Director for Clinical Research at the Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.